welcome to Tim and Friends. Did we already get the booze? I think we already got the booze. Did we already get the booze? I think we already got the booze. I haven't even started and we got the booze. I'm Tim McAuliffe, and even though we were off today, thank God it's Friday. It is May the 7th, and I started the day by helping my son with a Shakespeare play for school on Zoom. Oh, 2021. And now, here I am, in fair Toronto, where we lay our scene. So we will be sure to go wisely and slowly today, because for those who rush, stumble and fall.
Go streaking down the quad!
I said, those who rush, stumble and fall. I think you get the point. Don't rush. Let's just walk. Got another busy show for you today, and we will be with you until 6:30 across Eastern, with across all sports regions on Sportsnet. Full 2 hours on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And remember, you can stream anytime on Sportsnet now, which is also true of games, by the way. No need to use the PVR or miss half your game. Just head to Sportsnet now and watch the new way. That's the way we do it. If you're halfway through a game, go to Sportsnet now. Start over. Michael Grange will join us in the next block to talk about a Raptors season that was much ado about nothing in the end. Well, depending on the draft pick, it's all but over, though, after an overtime loss to the Wizards last night. Washington now 4 games up with 5 games left on the Raptors' schedule. And while last night was entertaining, it looked like at one point that neither team wanted to win the game. It was a comedy of errors down the stretch. And maybe the best, worst game of basketball I have ever seen. Shout out Freddie VanVleet.
Whatever that number is out there, we're the best, worst team of all time.
But the Raptors are hoping that all's well that ends well, with a Midsummer Night's Dream that they can win an NBA lottery. Okay, I'm done. I swear, blame my son's fifth grade class. No more Shakespeare references. The Raptors currently with the 7th worst record in the league, which gives them around an 8% chance at a top 3 pick. 8%.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Nah, not really. 8%. Better than what Lloyd Christmas had. It's Friday, which means that we have the best of the week for you. Also, a special treat for us today, as 2-time Olympic gold medalist Donovan Bailey will join me for a couple of segments in the second hour. We'll talk about this summer's Olympics and whether or not he's insulted that Seattle Seahawks wide receiver DK Metcalf thinks that he's got sprinter's speed. He's got speed. Does he have sprinter's speed? I'm guessing Donovan isn't too chicken to give his opinion.
He didn't pull up. He's a chicken. He didn't pull up at all. He's just a chicken.
All right, we'll also catch up with Kevin Millar, chat a little baseball. Blue Jays salvaged a split with the A's yesterday, despite suffering more injuries. Yes, more injuries in their series down in Oakland. But fair is foul, and foul is fair. And it looks like there is something to look forward to in the future, with a pair of star-crossed pitchers making their minor league debut yesterday. All right, I'm done with the Shakespeare. Big night for the Jays' number 4 and 6 prospects, Simeon Woods Richardson. He went 4 innings, 1 earned run, 8 Ks in those 4 innings for Double-A New Hampshire. While Alek Manoah, yes, a lot of people excited about Manoah's debut. He went 6 scoreless innings, Triple-A Trenton slash Buffalo, striking out 12 while giving up just 2 hits. Oh boy, I can feel the patience wearing out among Jays fans. It was also nice to be off yesterday so that we could move on from the Capulets and the Montagues. Sorry, the Capitals and the Rangers. And the protagonist, Tom Wilson. All right, now I'm done. And we can actually talk some hockey. Sorry, what's that? Oh, we can't. Zach McEwen, come on down. You're the next contestant on...
How Many Games?
So McEwen, Darnell Nurse going toe-to-toe, blow for blow in yesterday's game between the Canucks and the Oilers. Sticks out his knee. Darnell Nurse wasn't the only one asking a question. The question he asked after the knee was, what the bleep was that? Looks like the Department of Player Safety has also asked, what the bleep is that? And I don't want to tweet for the Department of Player Safety these days. Like, scrolling through their mentions right now is traumatic. Like, I don't wish that on anyone. Let's get to actual hockey. Auston Matthews can't stop scoring goals. My guy is just piling them up.
Marner in over the line, dropping for Matthews. Shooting, scores! There it is! Number 40 on the season! Oh! Mackinac, what a season he's had.
40 goals in 49 games. Maple Leafs 5-2 win over the Habs, clinching first place in the North Division. Was it ever in doubt, Leafs fans? And how about Connor McBeth? I mean, McDavid, sorry, in the groove. Thou canneth stoppeth. Despite the Oilers losing to Canucks, he had three more points last night, giving him an incredible 96 on the season. He needs 4 points to hit 100. He's got 4 games to do it. I got a feeling he might get there. Not only do we have Donovan Bailey with us, shout out to Canada's under 18 men's hockey team, who were led by a bunch of man children to a gold medal as well. Underagers, just turned 17-year-old Shane Wright captained the team, and 15-year-old Connor Bedard helped Canada capture gold at the IIHF U18 tournament with a 5-3 win over Russia. Wright had 2 goals and an assist in the win, while Bedard had a goal and an assist. Surprisingly, it was Canada's first gold medal since 2013 when they were led by a 15-year-old Connor McDavid. It all comes full circle. You know what I'm saying here? Starting to look like Canada's hockey future remains pretty damn bright, as Wright and Bedard could be the first overall picks in the next 2 drafts after this year. Which reminds me, first round picks, first overall, time for first things first. And a reminder, not to forget about your mom. No joke, just mom. First things first. Don't forget, kids, Sunday is Mother's Day, a chance to take stock and remember what's important. Like when this pandemic started and we all thought it was cute to say things like that. Whether it's Zoom in person, whether mom is still with us or not, whether it's making memories or already made memories, don't forget to take a few moments for mom or your kid's mom or your spouse's mom. I have a certain appreciation for mom. You see, I grew up the youngest of 4 boys. I needed mom. Not just 4 boys, but 4 boys in a ridiculously athletic household. Say 4 boys to anyone, and their immediate response is either your poor mother or your mother's a saint. Some cheesy cliches actually work. Anyone who knew my family growing up remembers us living in rinks, on fields, in gyms, and in cars on the way to those rinks, those fields, and those gyms. My dad coached. My mom fed, nursed, trained, reffed, enforced, protected, chauffeured, photographed again. She was a big photographer. Supported, cheered, consoled, and coached. There wasn't much time for her. Now, I learned by watching. And in this case, what I learned was strength, sacrifice, love. My oldest brother once told me my mom had a superhero cape in her closet. I didn't believe him. Now that I have 2 of my own, I believe. I see it all over again with my wife. How's it possible? Moms who not only rock, but are the rock of the family, my rock, my kids' rock, for years on end, and it didn't take a global pandemic to see it. I mean, we all see it. Supermoms littered everywhere, and they don't have to be athletes, but they are, making Grand Slam finals, holding titles, winning golds, those kind of moms. You know, last year our world changed in nearly an instant, and a lot of us were able to stop for a moment and rethink life, take stock of what matters most. And for me, it's the very things that my mom taught me along the way. Strength, sacrifice, love, and family. A good reminder for all of us. Happy Mother's Day.
First things first.
All right, now let's go back to yelling about Tom Wilson of the Department of Player Safety. Or not, it's a Friday, screw it. We're going to try and make mom smile. We're going to try and make you smile. We're going to try and make me smile. We're going to try and make digital producer Jesse Rubinoff, who's basically now the co-host of this show, smile as well. Jesse, I heard we put out a match game.
We did put out a match game. Before we get to match game, I got to tell you, there's a little bit of breaking NBA news.
Uh-oh.
It's not huge.
Uh-oh.
But Pelican star Zion Williamson has a fractured left ring finger and will be sidelined indefinitely. This is a team that is a game and a half out of the NBA play-in. So Zion Williamson out indefinitely. They have six games remaining, a game and a half out of the play-in. Doesn't look like they're going to get there. So the match game.
Hold on. I need to digest this. So they are just back of the Spurs.
Just back of the Spurs. A game and a half out of 10.
So it goes Blazers 7, Warriors, Grizzlies, Spurs. No one wanted to face the Pelicans.
No.
I don't think.
No, Zion's
Spurs
been
have
a
lost
beast
five in a row. Yeah, I'm just looking down at the standings right now to try and figure it out. Yeah, no, I think, listen, I hope that he can stay healthy because he is unbelievable when healthy, but that's another tough break.
At least it seems like it's an injury that you would hope doesn't nag. Like it's not a soft tissue injury that we've seen with certain Blue Jays. You have the fractured finger, you get over it, and that's that.
Yeah, it seems like it has been every year that we've seen him have
an
injury.
That's true.
1 year at Duke, 2 years in the NBA.
Not the time.
Three injuries.
Not the time you want to see a fractured finger either.
No, not at all.
Six games left. Like, come on.
I wish him a speedy recovery, though. I hope this is not his future.
As do I.
All right, let's bring the match game music back up. And I know that our match game centered around basketball.
So this Raptors season has been blank. Got me thinking.
Oh, this is
after this Zion news, this Raptors season has been as frustrating as a fractured finger. Perhaps. That's for me. That's not from anyone who wrote it.
Have you fractured? Well, you're a goalie.
I fractured my pinky playing soccer baseball when I was 13.
Soccer? Oh, trying to catch
something? I think I was the pitcher, maybe.
Right.
I think.
Right.
And it got kicked back to me, and it was like, they used like the ball.
What an underrated game.
Unbelievable game.
Yeah.
For teams?
Rounders / soccer baseball?
Oh, I loved it.
Oh, wonderful
Bring
game.
It back. Yeah. Bring back soccer baseball once the pandemic's over.
Dagan, you a big
right
soccer
now.
Baseball guy?
I enjoy it.
Yeah, good.
All right. Moving on with match game. The Raptors season has been blank. The Raptors season has been hard not being at home, says Courtney.
Okay, that's just true. It's not really all that funny.
Okay.
Whenever we leave the blank, it's always amazing or terrible. The match game always, like when we give you, I thought maybe we should go, this Raptors season has been crazier than blank. And then you get all the crazy references, right? Or more unpredictable than blank. And then you get unpredictables.
Yeah, that one was a little sentimental.
We left it blank.
Top. Yeah.
Right? And that gives you an open path.
You can go any way you
want. This is a canvas, kids, that you can use. Use it wisely, please. And I understand what you're saying. You tugged at the heartstrings.
To open it up.
Okay, I understand.
Next one. The Raptors season has been the opposite of the Last Dance documentary.
Right, I'd see there you go.
Yeah. Not a ton of winning.
No. Although it could have been early in Last Dance.
Yeah.
That's
true.
Michael trying to figure it out.
This has been more like Michael playing baseball.
Yeah.
It's not their fault.
It hasn't
been that bad. I'm just poking fun at them. They've had a tough year.
Right.
That's why we
can find a few people to talk really good about the Raptors season, like Michael found to talk really good about his baseball career.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Raptors season has been an exercise in patience, learning, evaluation, and an appreciation for a true home court. I mean, how crazy is it going to be when fans can once again pack Scotiabank Arena?
In any city in this country, and I don't know what it'll be or how it will look, and I'm sure it'll be some sort of graduation as I lean out of the camera shot because I'm way too comfortable on my own show.
It's Friday.
I apologize again. But I don't care how many people are there in the first few times. If you get to go, like the appreciation. I can't wait for the first bat flip. I don't know when the hell we'll get there. But I mean packed stadium, don't care what sport, and you get that moment.
Do we think, like, realistically, say it's a season opener for the Raptors or something like that, are we talking, like, playoff level intensity just because it's been so long.
Yeah. Well, look at the Astros at Yankee Stadium.
Good comparison.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it was just they had the opportunity. They had a bit of a moment, and the fans just took it and went.
Bring it. Yeah. It can't come soon enough. The Raptors season has been, Tyler says, as good as Malachi Flynn and Freddie Gillespie performing Party in the USA. I gotta say, Freddie Gillespie was a little underrated. It was a little underrated singing Party in the USA.
It was overrated in its underrated. It was like what Fred VanVleet said, right? Yeah. Like, you weren't expecting much. The buildup was there. And then all of a sudden, Freddie got into it. Freddie Gillespie gets... And then it just blows up. Yeah. And now you're jacked.
The boys were going crazy.
Even though it kind of sucked.
But he got into it. He embraced it. And that was the magic there. Right. The Raptors season has been like lactose intolerance. Even though you know it's going to suck later, you still have the ice cream.
There we go. As a lactose intolerant person, our boy Bunny LaRocque.
The jokes are coming in.
Yes.
The jokes are starting to roll in. This Raptor season has been necessary. Needed to see what our pieces look like moving forward in order to properly fill the gaps.
I don't want real answers. That's an amazing real answer. I don't want real answers. He's right. She's right. I don't know what it is. It says everything is broken. I agree. It is necessary. Got to see the pieces. That's not what I want.
Well, we have a ton coming We're going to get to some other funny ones. We'll get to some funny ones coming up.
Make me laugh, Canada.
It's a Friday. We need some giggles.
Yeah, I need some feel-good Friday vibes.
Yeah.
Give me some good ones. Give me some ones
to laugh about. Digital squad, on it.
All right. Coming up, Michael Grange joins us to talk Raptors. And who exactly is the favorite in the NBA right now? Can you answer that? Who is the favorite to win the NBA championship? Who's walking away with Larry O.B.? Who's even the favorite? It's a good question. We'll ask Michael Grange. Plus, MLB Network's Kevin Millar ahead of the Jays and Astros in Houston. We might talk Albert Pujols. We might talk about the Astros in New York. And two-time Olympic gold medalist Donovan Bailey. All that. Plus, the best of the week. Tim and friends on a Friday.
Marner in over the line, dropping for Matthews, shooting, scores! There it is! Number 40 on the season! Holy mackerel, what a season he's had!
He makes it look so easy. It's unreal to watch.
Now Simeon drills the ball deep down the left field line and gone. What an afternoon for Marcus Simeon.
We only get to come here once a year, but you know, maybe we'll be back in the playoffs.
A little bit of speed. Hunter Bedard walking in, back at drive, scores!
Just brilliant.
Oh, this is going to be a crazy event. I'm just glad that I'm able to just come back and still entertain.
Let me call out.
I'm my own boss. I'm my own boss.
One night. Got your hat.
There's Tim and friends across the Sportsnet family of channels still to come. Donovan Bailey will join me second hour along with Kevin Millar. We'll talk about the Olympics and some struggles for Canada as they attempt to qualify for said Olympics. That's all coming up on this edition of Tim and Friends. My next guest has done it all and continues to do it all. Print, magazine, book, TV, radio, whatever the hell hybrid this show is. His Twitter account reads, married, two kids in a lab, his two turntables and a microphone. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Grange rejoins us on Tim and Friends. What's up, Mikey? How you doing?
Hey, always good to be here, man. Always good to be your friend, Tim. Always good. Whenever I'm in doubt, when I get the Zoom call, I'm like, hey, I'm still a friend. I have one friend.
True or false, you did what I have to do every day with three Zoom calls in my house because I have a teacher and two kids in the house and we're all homeschooling right now in Ontario still. Did you just send the got to be quiet kids text?
The shut the F up group text? Yes.
Your kids are a little older than mine. Yeah. Yeah. Understood. So I guess it's over now for the Toronto Raptors. I mean, it was supposed to be over before last night, was it not? But the Raptors just didn't know how to play along?
It's really weird, you know, the way it all has kind of worked out. But yeah, it is over. I mean, there is the mathematical possibility that Washington or Indiana absolutely collapses. They basically each have to lose the rest of their games and the Raptors run the table. But you know, the interesting thing here, Tim, is when this team went 1-13 in March and there was a tank staring at them right in the face, they kind of didn't do it all that well. Yeah. And, you know, and then here you are going into a game that, hey, if they win that game, I think, you know, I wouldn't say they would have been a favorite to grab the 10th spot, but they would have been in the picture right to the end. And, you know, they sat down Kyle Lowry for no reason at all. I mean, I give them the credit. They didn't try and make one up. They just said, we're going to rest them so we do not win this game, or we reduce the possibility of winning this game. And, you know, and their motivations are obvious if you're closely paying attention, but, you know, I kind of dock them marks because I think, you know, I think they've put Nick Nurse in an awkward spot night after night because they haven't really telegraphed in any shape or form what their real intentions are. And, you know, and I think there's a lot of fans out there. Look, it's cool to be down with tanking. It's cool to understand the big picture, but a lot of fans just tune in and they want to see their favorite team win. And, you know, and I think when you don't have provide a little guidance as to what your real bigger picture plans are, it gets confusing for people.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that I've preached is culture, but it's just playing to win and making sure that the guys that you see a future in get the sort of reps that will pay dividends down the road, even if they don't pay dividends this year. And I think they've gotten that by hanging around in some of these games, but it's so tough when you're shorthanded and you don't have other players that you can lean on, like a Kyle Lowry down the stretch.
And that's what's shown over and over, you know, through this stretch. I mean, I think part of the challenges the Raptors had is they have a habit of accumulating a lot of pretty good players. Right. And so when those pretty good players are given the opportunity to play 30 plus minutes a night, they usually play pretty well, and they're really competitive, and they're, you know, they're really well coached. And so they're either in games or they're winning games. You might not expect them to win, but, you know, over and over again, what does show up is when you're playing shorthanded, when you're playing less than your best, or with a less than optimal lineup, it's going to show in those last 5 minutes of games. And I mean, I think that's the Raptors' record in the clutch this year is really, really poor.
Yeah.
And that's a reversal of what they've had the last two or three years. So I think that ends up being the story of the season. I think you're right. I mean, there's been a lot of positives through all this. I just think that they could have, you know, I'm not saying they had to win and you know, it's an abomination that they set Kyle Lowry. I just think that had they been a little more clear in their purpose, they might have done better at tanking. Yeah. And saved, you know, and let their fan base in on the secret of it.
I mean, when you look at the stats right now, they're not in a tough spot. I know it's pretty bunched up. So the rest of the way, did you just sit everybody? Like, who's going to play? Has Kyle Lowry played his last game of the season?
That's a great question. I don't think so. You know, I think that's a whole other topic, right? Is you know, how do you properly say goodbye to Kyle Lowry if indeed you are going to, and the guy's is going to be 18 months without playing a game in Toronto. But I think you're going to see a lot of minutes and a lot of run for the guys on your line and on that team. You think you would expect, right? You're probably going to rest Fred VanVleet a lot. I think you're going to rest Pascal Siakam a reasonable amount. He's actually carried that probably the heaviest load of everybody. I think they do want to get OG Anunoby back. I do kind of believe that there's, you know, I think he could play. I think they've just been super cautious that they don't want him to pop anything going into the offseason and what's going to be a big offseason for him in terms of preparation. But yeah, it's going to be, they've had what, 33 starting lineups. I mean, they won't get to 40 because they only have five games left, but they'll be pushing on it.
Still a franchise record either way. It's been unbelievable. Listen, the Kyle Lowry thing is really interesting to me because I don't know and I haven't heard whether or not or what the possibility of him returning is. So to see the quote that I saw in your story yesterday, like, it was eye-opening because, wait, listen, if you didn't read Mike, one, shame on you. Two, here's what he said. Lowry said in Michael Grange's piece, let's put it this way, I'm very well rested. I'm very healthy, and I'm very, very, very well rested. Like, are we going to get another team fine for a quote like that? Like, just, I mean, there's so many layers to this. And, like, do you have an idea if there's a possibility of his return next year or what that would be?
They won't get another fine because that quote, and I did, no fault on yours, you didn't catch that. It was from back when they sat him four straight games after they acknowledged, his toe's fine. So, you know, basically I was making the point that I think he's only played 9 of 22 possible games since the trade deadline. Nobody's toe was that infected. Like, it would have been amputated. And, you know, and he acknowledged, like, look, this is a bit of a ruse. I mean, there's been moments Fred VanVleet sort of said the same thing. I've said all along that there is, among a range of possibilities, that Kyle Lowry is playing for the Raptors next year. You know, but it is within a range of possibilities. And the guy, as we know, is still an outstanding player. And as we know, he likes to get paid commensurate with that. So, you know, I think Kyle's not a guy who's going to go ring hunting and go, look, just give me the mid-level and I'll come join whatever team's most likely to win a title. You know, he wants to get a real contract. He's coming off a $30 million deal. His skills haven't diminished. I don't think he wants to play for much less than that much money. Or should he, really? And, you know, but so when you get into that number, there's only so many places you can go.
Yeah.
There's, you know, teams that either have to have cap space or the Raptors would need to cooperate to execute a sign and trade. I think it's been reported by me and others that by far his preferred destination, if he doesn't come back to Toronto, is Miami, even well ahead of Philadelphia. I think the connection between him and Philadelphia is a little bit overstated, maybe a lot overstated.
Jimmy Butler.
I think it's Miami for all kinds of reasons, right? Great organization. You've got a good young, you know, like it's a good team. You know, check all the boxes, right? And they are going to have, they should have enough room to sign him to something in the 2-year, $20 million right. range. The Raptors can beat that if they want to. And, you know, when you kind of look at this team and how good it is and how many interesting pieces they have, and you're really, I think, only maybe one player away from being a really, really competitive team again in the East. And that's presuming Kyle Lowry comes back. I mean, I think they'd still be good even if he doesn't come back. And so I just think that there is a scenario where, you know, the market that doesn't quite materialize the way Kyle Lowry is hoping it might, and he probably deserves it too. And the Raptors are there kind of, saying, listen, we're always here for you, as they've done in every contract he's ever had. He's always gone to the market, and it's always turned out that Toronto's the best place for him, and he's come back. And, you know, and so if Kyle Lowry's back on a one-year, a one-plus-one deal or whatever it might be, and it doesn't work out, well, next year at the trade deadline, he would still, I'm sure, be a very valuable player, maybe easier to trade because he's on, say, $20 million instead of $30 million. And, you know, we could all be having this exact same conversation then. So that's a long way of saying I don't know exactly what Kyle Lowry's future is, but I think there are multiple possibilities, and one of them I think is he does end up here in Toronto again,
which is kind of similar to the rest of Kyle Lowry's free agency periods. Listen, I have publicly backed Pascal Siakam. I think he's a really good player. There's absolutely no axe to grind on my side. I think maybe he should rebound a little bit better, and he should invite contact a little bit better. But
more better is good.
More better. Yeah, more better. More better.
We understand it.
Yeah. can we have a civilized conversation about his late game execution?
Oh, 100%.
I think the Raptors, in some of these steps that we're talking about, were trying to get him a lot of these late game touches because they knew he is their best chance to turn into that guy, because it's so hard for smaller guards to find those shots late in games. He hasn't really stepped up to the plate, and I'm not just talking about last night. I'm talking about missed free throws down the stretch. I'm talking about turnovers, travels when he has the ball late in the game. The civilized conversation on Pascal Siakam and where he needs to be.
It's very easy to have a civilized conversation. This guy is a work in progress. And, you know, I think his rapid ascension from being a true role player as a rookie to being a kind of a really fun rotation piece in year two, to being a borderline all-star in year three. And then, you know, he kind of, year four, he was all NBA, if I got all my years right. I mean, that just doesn't happen, right? Right? Especially for a guy picked where he was picked. And he touched on it again last night. The experience he's had this year, where all of a sudden, you know, and last year, he's being asked to attack loaded defenses, make the right decision all the time, do it, you know, late in games when, you know, the mistake is most obvious. That's a new experience for him. Every other player in the NBA, and somebody might prove me wrong, but I'm going to say this. Every other player in the NBA who's given that responsibility has had that responsibility since they're in grade three, right? Like, nobody is kind of learning this on the fly. Pascal Siakam is, as we all know, a late starter to the game. And even in his college experience, wasn't put in those situations, let alone as a pro. And so I think, you know, I, for one, see a lot of progress in these areas. I think overall his playmaking is getting way better. I think as the season has gone along, he's been much better at getting the free throw line. I think he's really learning to kind of find how to integrate all the different skills he has. I mean, the greatest line I ever heard on this stuff once was Sam Mitchell talking about Andrea Bargnani, and I'm not trying to smear Pascal Siakam here at all. But the point being that you know, Bargnani's, you know, he wasn't, you know, the plan wasn't to develop him to go stand on the left block and shoot jump hooks, right? The plan was to develop him as a 7-foot point forward. And he said it's like learning the decathlon. There's just so many different things you need to master to be able to do that job at a high NBA level. It takes time. And I think I've seen Pascal make progress. People talk about end of games. I've seen him make a lot of progress at the end of quarters. And those possessions count too. You can see him. He's looking a lot more confident. He's making plays out of those scenarios. So there's no escaping the fact he's been, you might say poor at the end of games. But I think you'd be wrong to sell short on him right now. Right. I think they're forcing the issue right now. I think they certainly were last night. You can see them just trying to constantly go to him and you know, get him to normalize that experience.
Yeah.
And then eventually they'll maybe pull back on that. And all of a sudden it's you know, you're not going to require it of him every single time. But, you know, the way, you know, it's like sink or swim. And eventually I think he'll swim.
Michael Grant is joining us here on Tim and Friends. I got to do a little Inside the Lines with you, Mikey. I want to get your opinion on this. Time now for Inside the Lines, brought to you by Sports Interaction, Canada's odds maker, 19+. Please play responsibly. It is one of the most wide-open NBA seasons that we have seen in a long time. Despite losing four in a row, the Brooklyn Nets are still the favorites to win the NBA title at plus 275, followed by the Lakers plus 400, Clippers plus 500. Michael, who would your money be on if we were forcing you to bet, and where is their value on this board? Because it seems like you might be able to kind of sneak one out here because of how wide open it is.
Yeah, I think if I was really serious about making money or not losing money, I think I'd put money on the Clippers. I think that they're of those favorites. I think they have the least question marks. I mean, we'll see what happens with Serge Ibaka, and can he get back up to speed after missing so much time with his back? But, you know, top to bottom, they're pretty healthy. They've been through that bitter experience last year. They have proven game-winning type players, and you know, so I think they'd be my safest pick. I think my value pick, without question, looking at that list, is the 76ers, plus 1,200, whatever that number is. That seems wild to me. And if I was going to pick one team that I'd be least surprised to win the NBA title, I can't believe that number for the Sixers, actually. I think I would pick the Nets. And the reason I'm not saying they're the safest bet is obviously – health concerns and the lack of continuity. But I think, you know, if James Harden can go back at full,
Michael,
he is who can score the most.
You froze for a second. Sorry, I was going to do a robot because you froze, but you have unfrozen, so I will stop doing this.
Okay.
Continue on.
Yeah, I think if James Harden can be healthy, I do think the Nets are going to be, I think they'd be my favorite. But that's obviously a huge question mark, so that's why I'd be the slightly safer money, put it on the Clippers. I would not be betting on the Lakers.
Here's why I'm so scared of the Nets. They are such a great offensive team, but I've done the numbers on teams that don't have good defenses, and there's basically like two teams since the mid-'80s who have been outside the top 10 in defensive efficiency and won a title, and both of them were defending champs who ended up repeating and had taken their foot off the gas after having like a top five defense the year before, and the Nets are 25th.
Right, and I don't think, you know, I wouldn't dismiss that. Like, clearly it's important to be able to get stops at key moments, but, you know, for... let's go back 29 of the past 30 years, the league was a different league. Like, we really, as much as there's been an offensive explosion in the past 10 years, like right now it's a volcano, like it's going crazy.
Right.
And like to have those three guys, Kyrie Irving, having to account for Kyrie Irving, James Harden and Kevin Durant all at the same time, all at different spots on the floor, all above the 3-point line. And then once you somehow do account for them, you've still got to figure out what Joe Harris is doing. You've still got to figure out what Jeff Green is doing. You still have to figure out what, you know, go on down the list. And I just think that they have too many options. And really, I think it's going to come back down to this, Tim. I think in a game of 100 possessions over, so let's say a series is 700 potential possessions over seven games, I think the Nets are going to score 1.2 points or 1.15 points per possession. And I don't think any other team can do that over seven games. So I just think that they'll win.
I gotcha. Mikey, always great catching up with you. It seems as though the kids listen to the group text.
They are. They're probably just on their phones.
I've never seen screen time. We don't have a problem with that at my house. I don't know about you, but I'm lying. Thanks, Mikey.
Always good, man. Have a great weekend.
You too. There is Michael Grange joining us from home in the greater Toronto area. Time for a break. Still to come, Donovan Bailey. That's right. Donovan Bailey, two segments, will join me. But on the other side, it is our Friday tradition. It is the best of the week. And how many games did Zach MacEwen get? We tell you next on Tim and Friends. Welcome back to the show. Tim and Friends here on Sportsnet. And earlier on, we played how many games only because the Department of Player Safety told us that we should look out for how many games when it came to the Canucks' Zach MacEwen. So we've got an answer. Let's play the opening again, kids.
How many games?
Jesse, I know you've got the update from the Department of Player Safety. How many games?
The answer is... one game. Zach MacEwen has been suspended for one game for kneeing Edmonton's Darnell Nurse. I feel like the breaking news man today.
Now, if you scroll down or you come to my computer, Maddie, I know we're going to show the replay of Nurse and MacEwen were going at it the entire game. If you look at my computer right now, you can see what's called the ratio, kids. And this is where you compare the amount of comments to the amount of likes. And the amount of comments on this Department of Player Safety tweet is 278. The amount of likes, 157. As I said earlier in the show, Jesse, you as a digital producer, if they offered you same money, leave Tim and Friends, go work for the NHL Department of Player Safety.
No, stop it. The answer is no.
It's like traumatic.
Same money? Triple, okay. Maybe?
Double,
no. Triple? At this, they need triple. They need the offseason as bad as just about anybody in sports right now.
Truly depressing part, Aquilini won't pony up to 25 or the... $250,000 to tell them how they really feel. Clown emoji. Completely competent when it comes to player safety. Absolutely superb. Superb. This is all sarcasm. It's unbelievable. And there's also a ton of really bad takes.
Yeah.
People have no idea what a penalty in the NHL is.
I can't just aimlessly scroll on my computer here because there's just too many obscenities.
Swear words. Yeah.
It's ugly. It's ugly.
All right. Time now for the best of the week. We will show you the options. Then you can head over to sportsnet.ca/vote to make your choice. Now, legendary MMA ring announcer Bruce Buffer may be more popular than his half-brother Michael Buffer, but his cameo videos certainly take the cake. In his latest release, Buffer introduces a newborn baby. That's right, a few hundred bucks. These parents, Darren and Haley, got Buffer to announce the arrival of their new bundle of joy.
It's time to welcome the future champion of the world, Mason William Russell.
Got dressed up for the occasion, too. That's awesome. Since we're a family show, nominee number two comes courtesy of stay-at-home dad and comedian Evan Kyle Berger. The Proud Papa went viral for his video where he combines parenthood, sports cliches, and press conferences we all watch.
You sum up the day.
Yeah, honestly, just felt like we got behind early. After the milk spill and the marker on the wall, we just felt like we were playing catch up the rest of the day.
Right before you went to the store, you called a timeout. Was there an attitude change after that?
Yeah, it felt like we were losing our heads there for a minute, so we wanted to just calm things down and get back to the basics.
Did you ever find your keys?
No. No idea where they are.
You gave them a snack half hour before dinner. Was that planned?
No. Lost track of time. Wasn't thinking. And so, you know, three bites at dinner. That's on me.
It didn't look like you had many answers to the double team.
Is that a question?
That's on me.
That's on me. It's very good. And anyone who's, like, yet to have children, like Jesse, who's kind of looking at that and saying, we all become that. When you have children, we all, every single one of us, turn into our dads. It is inevitable. All right, earlier in the week, Kenny the Jet Smith stopped by to discuss Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers, and in the process, Kenny may or may not have touched a nerve with Raptor fans about the departure of the Claw. Tell us, what would have happened if he had stayed, Kenny?
If he stays, you know, they had a premier team in the East, and probably more guys would have wanted to be there. I think they, you know, he bolted probably a year too early. But, you know, he's not doing more in the West than he did in the East with Toronto.
Kenny, I don't cry because it's over. I smile because it happened. Okay?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you tell that to every divorcee out there.
From dads to divorcees, and finally, speaking of divorcees, new Carolina Panthers QB Sam Darnold making waves with his new club. Darnold was acquired from the Jets in the offseason in exchange for three draft picks and an apparent lack of artistic ability.
Sam Darnold draws some things.
Is that good?
That's pretty golden. Draw a bear.
Sir Purr?
What's that man doing?
That's Sir Purr, bro.
That's good, right?
Close enough.
I'll take it.
Draw the Panthers logo. Yay.
That's it.
For those listening on radio, the last one looked like a devil.
I can't hate on him because I'd be way worse.
I think if we played that game in studio,
yeah,
I would be terrible too.
For sure. It was brutal in like grade six art. No chance.
Although I did like Mr. Dress-Up. I don't know if you're too young for Mr. Dress-Up, but when he brought out those markers and he went to that big board like that, yeah, he just looked so cool. All right, head to sportsnet.ca/vote to make your pick. You can see the plays on our Twitter with a link to vote as well. We will reveal the winner, as we always do on Friday, kids, at the end of the show. This one is jam-packed. Start to finish, my friends, we have got you covered. Coming up on this edition of Tim and Friends, not only is Kevin Millar going to stop by to discuss Major League Baseball and some interesting series for the Astros, first with the New York Yankees, then with the Toronto Blue Jays starting tonight. And my old friend, Canadian Olympic hero, Donovan Bailey, will join me. Hard to believe it's been nearly 25 years since double gold in Atlanta. We will discuss that. Plus, plans for the Tokyo Olympics just over 2 months away. We'll do it all next right here. Tim and Friends includes Donovan Bailey next.
Talk with Tim McAuliffe and friends of the show.
Final hour, too sweet to be sour. Unlike my show, Fresh West, I'm not from Birch Mount, just north of Glendower. Timothy McAuliffe here with you for 30 more minutes on Sportsnet and the full hour on 360 and 590 of the Fan. Jays in Houston tonight, Blue Jays Central, about an hour away. Kevin Millar, former world champ, current MLB Network star, will join me in about 30 minutes' time. And speaking of world champions, I'm not sure my next guest knows, though I've said it a couple of times, he is the lone holder of two, count them, two, of my "Where Were You When" moments. As the great Don Whitman once said, you gotta love Saturday nights in Atlanta, which amazingly, we are closing in on another anniversary of those moments. Double gold, and now a piece of those moments as a broadcaster on our Olympic coverage here in Canada. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to introduce Canadian legend Donovan Bailey back to Tim and Friends. What's going on, Donovan? How are you?
Hey, man. How you doing? Glad to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back. Good to have you back. How's everyone doing? I know, obviously, these aren't ideal situations. Everyone okay at home?
You know what? Yes. You know what? I got to tell you, man, in light of where we are in society today, you know, I really have to count my blessings. You know, everyone in my family is healthy. All of my friends are healthy. You know, even some that have even contracted COVID, they've all recovered, like friends or extended family or whatever. So yeah, in light of all what's going on now, there's really no complaints. I mean, I think that, you know, the only thing that we all want to do is probably me and my buddies want to get back on the golf course.
there's a lot of us who want to get back on the, listen, one cart each guy, we're good. What are we doing here?
Absolutely.
All right. I don't get political very often, but I don't see the problem. One cart, bunch of dudes, let's go play. Listen.
Right.
Listen. Absolutely. Is my math correct, or are we nearing 25 years, the 25th anniversary of those double goal moments? Are we getting old, Donovan? What's going on here?
Oh, man, what are you talking about? Am I getting old? Listen, sometimes it feels that, listen, this year we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of Atlanta. See, the good thing is, though, Tim, is that, you know, I probably get to celebrate every single day, whether or not it's virtual or, you know, I might just be walking down the street or I'm out and about getting a coffee or something. But I'm reminded every day, and one of the great things about Canadian fans is that, you know, as you mentioned earlier, it was is definitely a "Where Were You at That Moment?"
Yeah.
You know, so I am reminded about what it meant to a lot of Canadians, a lot of sports fans overall. So it definitely is 25 years, and you and I are both keeping it together. So that's what I like.
It's interesting. So do people tell you their "Where Were You When" stories? Like, is that the interaction that you most often get? Was like, because I wrote down, I was like, man, I got to remember. Oh yeah, well, this is where I was. This is what. Like, do people just tell you randomly, here's where I was when each one of those happened?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I hear it all the time. I mean, you know, but I'm saying, again, I've been blessed of many things. I mean, whether it's, you know, people, I've met several, like, couples who were getting married that, like, Saturday and, like,
right. Like
canceled or delayed or interrupted, you know, like, either a ceremony or the reception.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that's reached out, you know, like, across the planet, actually, where they name their sons or they name their sons Donovan somewhere in their name or name their daughters Bailey right. somewhere in their name. Nice. I mean, so yeah, I mean, a lot of people name their dogs, you know, so hey, listen, however I'm getting support and I'm happy with it.
There's two ways you know you've made it. One is someone names a kid after you. Two, you're a hip hop lyric. Like, if you're in either one of those, you made it. You made it in life. I remember I was at VIP Snooker Club in Scarborough with the most eclectic group of dudes that you could ever possibly have. And I remember stopping in the moment and realizing, like, this is such a cool Canadian moment to see all these faces from different backgrounds kind of congregated around this big screen TV watching. And the best part of it was, Donovan, we all started in one spot, and I'll never forget this. And I'm the kind of dude that takes in things like this. I watch people. I understand things. Like, this is what I am. And everyone moved, like, 3 feet over. And I'm moving out of the screen. Because they started the race with you and kind of ran. Right? Yeah. So it was like everyone had moved like 6 feet over. It was so amazing. And I was like, what a great moment this is to share with like 100 different people in this snooker club in Scarborough.
Well, you know what it does, though? I mean, you know, what it does, it actually says how much of a great fan that you are of sports. Because me, as a fan of sports, whether if I'm watching, I remember watching boxing as a child with my dad.
Yeah.
And like my dad is like jabbing. And I'm just so you learn that as a real, true, authentic fan. So I would watch boxing, I'd do that. Like even when I'm watching the kids like Aaron and Andre and you know Justin Gatlin, the guys that are competing now, like it's hard for me working in media sometimes to watch a live race and not react.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're saying that you're in a bar. And obviously I was competing, so
yeah, you were there.
I was moving. But,
you were in Atlanta.
I'm saying to you that it shows that you being like a real true fan, and also it's a real true moment, man. So you know, listen, thanks for the support. I'm definitely one of your friends. I already know that.
It's so funny when you bring up boxing. Like as the youngest of four boys, like you're out there pawn, like you're throwing the jab out. I'm just this. Mm-hmm. I'm just covering up and trying to make sure I'm not getting hit. Youngest of four boys, I knew how to take a punch, and that was about it. I never threw.
Yep.
Just had the hands up.
You never threw? What the hell is wrong with you?
Oh, I never. 4 years older than me was my closest brother. I learned early you don't throw.
Like, oh, got it.
You throw, and if you land, jam done. Yeah,
jam done.
Yeah, yeah. You're in deep trouble if you land.
Sure.
I know you're going to be involved in an initiative for Canadians to pass the baton forward. Do you want to do this now? Do you want to come back a little closer to the... Hal, let's do both. Let's do it now, and when you come back, passthebaton.ca. It's in support of Big Brothers and Big Sisters, BGC Canada, and the Donovan Bailey Sports Experience Scholarship. Tell us about kind of what you wanted to do with what is one of Canada's great sporting moments.
Well, listen, 25 years is coming up, and I've thought about, and also there's been suggestions of several things that I could dedicate myself to. Mm-hmm. And this one, Pass the Baton Canada, is really the marriage that I've had with the Oakville Foundation. I mean, I've been with them. We've been great partners for over three decades. And I wanted to have a national campaign that really was community-based, so community-based across the country. Now, the number one thing that I've always done is help and mentor kids. And so Big Brothers and Sisters and Boys and Girls Club of Canada are the beneficiaries of this. Now, this is a virtual event. Obviously, we can't have an event this year. That sucks. But this year, our inaugural year is going to be a virtual event. 25K, 5K, 1K, 4x1 relay, run 100 meters, nice. Run 50. We don't care. Sign up. We want every single person in Canada to go to passthebatoncanada.com, to sign up for a virtual event and celebrate the moment. July 27th to August 3rd, as you mentioned, is, they were in that time 25 years ago, was two of the significant sporting moments in history, especially in the history of this country. And we really want to find something good to celebrate. So not only can you watch it on TV, you can go out and film yourself or tape yourself or run a relay, in your bubble, be safe and send it to us. I mean, we just want really for there to be like a week that there's incredible celebration and we get to relive that every single year. One of the great things about this year also is not only do you go out and do some active We also want you to watch Tokyo. We want you to watch, you know, Aaron and Andre and every single person that's on the Canadian squad and cheer them on also, because, you know, no fans or parents even are going to be allowed in the stands in Tokyo. So, I mean, we have to figure out some way, one, to celebrate an incredible moment, two, to cheer on the athletes that are competing now. So I thought that pass the baton to me is it's also, you know, the education and wisdom and experiences that I've learned over the years, and my responsibility at this age, as it is yours, is to pass on that knowledge to the next person, the next generation of great leaders or great people that is going to be following in our footsteps.
Next in line.
Clearly. Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, you know, you're one of the preeminent, you know, sports broadcasters in this country. And so for me, I'm like, you know, I want you to pass the baton also to the next kids that be like, hey, man, I want to be on a show. I want to be like him. So it's all of these things that encompasses to me one big celebration of us passing on what we have all known or what we've learned to the next generation.
I'm down. I am without it. I am in. I am down. However you want to say it, I'm in. Whatever you need from me, I am here for you. I want to get it. You mentioned Aaron and Andre and the Tokyo Games, and I want to get into all that in a flash. But I was reading a story about the IOC banning political protests and punishing athletes that participate in them. Have you seen this story? And I wonder what your reaction to it is.
I have seen the story. Mm-hmm. I think it's the worst thing ever. I do not agree with the IOC. I think that, you know, the world has shifted for the positive, obviously because of the death of George Floyd and several other black and brown people. And I think that the IOC is really not, is very tone deaf in this situation. I don't think that they should dictate what happens or what the athletes do. You know what? Listen, here's the thing. I don't think that you should interrupt. You know, obviously, as a media person, on and off, I don't think you should interrupt the broadcast of a show or something. But I think that I think it's crazy for the IOC to dictate to someone that they can't protest something that they might feel they might feel passionate about. And so I do not agree with that. But unfortunately, the IOC is like, kind of like the UFC. I mean, the IOC is like NCAA sports.
Yeah.
They govern everything. And it's unfortunate that their business model and their business infrastructure will not allow protests, because it seems that it would be very hard to unite all the athletes to actually have a proper protest that would make change immediately.
You know, it's funny, is the irony of it all is the ban is kind of a political act in of itself. And
right.
The crazy thing is, if there wasn't so much money involved, the Olympics can be and have been a wonderful platform for change. Like, how has the ISC not learned? Like, what are we, 50 some odd years since Tommy Smith and John Carlos in Mexico City? Like,
yes.
And still the IOC doesn't get it?
Well, that's what's really crazy. I mean, you know, John Carlos and Tommy Smith, 1968, I've spoken to those guys often. I mean, and it's like 19, so next year it'll be 50 years. Yeah. So, I mean, or is it 50? No, what am I saying? Yeah. Is it 52 years? I mean, you know, it is crazy that they don't understand the significance of the moment 50 plus years ago. Yeah. And the fact is that there is some traction today, and probably more than anything, this year should be the year that the IOC themselves become a partner in what's going on. Because as you can see, the greatest and biggest stars on the planet are the commodities at the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
And they are black and brown people.
Donovan Bailey, let's take the break. Why don't we come back and we'll do a little bit more on the Olympics and then maybe focus in on some of our athletes who have a bit of a hill to climb, too, because there are some qualifying situations in our country that might make it really tough for a few people to get there. Maybe even do a cut or uncut. Stick around for one more segment.
Absolutely.
Friend of the show, Donovan Bailey, Canadian legend. We will come back with him and maybe check in on some of our match game responses. We'll do that all next right here on Tim and Friends across the Sportsnet family of channels. Tim and Friends for another about 10 minutes on Sportsnet. We will continue. So if you want to flick over to Sportsnet 360 or Sportsnet 590, the fan got you covered there. Donovan Bailey is the friend for the first half hour of this hour. Donovan, we mentioned the names Aaron and Andre, and they seem to be among the bigger stars right now in all of track and field. Are there legitimate gold medal aspirations for both those men going into Tokyo?
I hope so. I hope so. I mean, one of the great things is that we actually have two horses in this race. You know, Aaron is a very talented kid. I've watched him compete since he was 16. Andre is extremely talented. So, I mean, you know, I'm a fan of both of them. I mean, you know, I would hope that they both give them one train, give themselves an opportunity during the season, get to the Olympics, qualify, get to the finals, and give themselves and put themselves in a position that they could win. You know, if anything, remember that the last time the Olympics was held, there's a guy named Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
So this year, there's going to be a new king no matter what. You know, the reigning champion, world champion, is a guy named Christian Coleman. He's out with a suspension, you know, so it's wide open this year. I mean, from Justin Gatlin, you know, Wade Van Niekerk. I mean, there's a lot of people that could get in there this year. But I'm telling you, man, we've got two horses, Aaron Brown and Andre DeGrasse, and I'm praying to God that they become, you know, that they can make it to the top of the podium. You know, in Canada there's been an extreme drought. I mean, 1928 Percy Williams, 1996 myself. And that's it.
Right.
You know, so there's, we got room. We got room in the club. We've got room in that exclusive club. So hopefully one of these guys can come through, get in the race and, you know, relax and take it home.
Both of them like to run the 200. You didn't do that when you were at the height of your game. Do you like them running the 200 or would you advise against it?
Well, I'm not going to advise against running the 200, man. I just thought it was just hellified long. I thought, man, this is crazy. I mean, I thought, like, you run 100 meters and you're like, whew, I got another 100 to go. No, I can't do that stuff. So I can't even give you advice on that. I certainly can tell you how to run one. But I think it's really good that both of these guys double. I really think also that both of them, their best race is the 200 meters. And so, I mean, I like the fact that they're both doubling. I like the fact that they both should make it to the finals in Tokyo in both those events. And I like the fact that they both should medal in both those events.
Who are other names that we should know as Canadians going into these Olympic Games or even into the qualification? And I know that there are some struggles with qualification. We're going to get Diamond League going up soon. Hopefully there's a Harry Jerome Classic in June in BC. Or at least hopefully it is a world-class event because I know that there are some struggles on when people need to get to BC and all these. Are there a couple of other names that folks outside of Aaron Brown or Andre DeGrasse should know of?
Oh, you're talking about on the world stage?
Yeah, world stage, yes. Canadian stage, whatever, wherever you want to go with it.
Well, I think Aaron, well, I mean, justifiably, Aaron and Andre are two
big stars.
Metal hopefuls. Yeah. I mean, it would be great for another one of the other young guys to come through and even make it to the finals. But I think it's again, I'm hopeful and I'm optimistic. But Aaron and Andre are, I believe, our hopefuls. Now, as far on the world stage, oh man, there could be another 20 people. I mean, like there's, you know, you probably have three Chinese sprinters that can make it through. You certainly have Sambini from South Africa, Wade Van Niekerk from South Africa. I don't know whether or not he's going to run. He's a 400 meter world record holder, but he's also run sub 10 sub 20. You know, there's probably four Americans, Trevon Bromell, who was one of the best sprinters in the world before he got hurt, is probably the fastest sprinter in the world right now. Justin Gatlin, you cannot
ever count him out. No matter how old he'll be, 55, and we can't count him out.
Cannot ignore. Yeah, you cannot, like, he is. You cannot ignore Justin Gatlin, and frankly, he's the guy that I think, you know, at this point, has nothing to lose. He's going to go in there and let it all out. I mean, and Justin has always showed up at the major championships. You know, there's going to be a few Jamaicans. Listen, right now I can probably ramble off 20 names,
right.
But it's only going to be 8 guys. And certainly, you know, I'm going to cheer for the guys that I think are going to bring home, you know, hopefully bring home medal for us and represent Canada. Hopefully hearing our national anthem would be good.
See that flag go. Have me go back to VIP in Scarborough and move across the bar with a bunch of different dudes. I think it's still there. Let's have some fun. Yeah. Jesse Rubinoff is here, and he has prepared some cut or uncut. He'll explain it all. We're going to give you a couple of situations, and we have to determine whether or not they're cut or uncut. Go ahead, Jesse.
Let's do it. I'll present a topic, Donovan. You tell me if it's cut or uncut. Cut meaning we don't like it. Uncut means we dig it. It's cool. All right, let's go with topic number one. Seahawks star receiver DK Metcalf is preparing to compete in the 100-meter sprint at Sunday's Golden Games and Distance Open, hoping to earn a spot at next month's U.S. Olympic Trials. DK did run a 4:33.40 at the 2019 Combine. Now, Donovan, you are literally the best person to ask this question to. Is what DK is doing cut or uncut?
Uncut means good, right?
Yeah.
That's correct.
Absolute uncut. For sure, I love it. I think that, listen, the number one thing is, fellas, is that anytime there's good news about track and field, I love it, right? And DK, I don't care what he runs. It doesn't matter. I mean, he's certainly going to, like, if I was competing or some of the other track and field athletes are competing, they're thinking, man, I want to get this NFL guy in here so I can bury him. Yeah. I know that.
Right.
But yeah. for me as a fan, I think that good news in track and field, good news, you know, a big football star getting out there and trying to make the team, great news, love it.
Okay, but let's be honest. He's going to get his ass handed to him.
I believe that there's going to be a nice big plate of ass.
For those who need the context, Christian Coleman in 2017, when he was at Tennessee, ran a 40. Mm-hmm. Just to show the football dudes what a track guy does, he ran a 4:12.
Yeah.
That's a tenth of a second faster than anyone has ever run it at the combine. Sometimes when people say sprinter speed, and I'm a football guy, like I played football, I love football dudes, it's not the same.
Right. No. DK
it's
has
not
no
the
chance.
Same.
No chance.
Well, actually, I gotta tell you this also. I think that people forget this, you know? Real speed, like when you learn to run a 40, like a real sprinter is running between 3:07 and 3:09. That's a normal average sprinter. My right. fastest time in the 40 is 3:78, right? So it's gonna be a little different. Right. It's gonna be, yes, right. yeah. Right. Tim, what do you think about that?
No, I did.
I have the 50-meter world record, right?
Yeah,
still,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, and so I think that we're gonna see quickly, you know what's really funny? My interest in watching the race is actually just seeing him run the first 30 because it's going to determine a lot of things. I hope he's watched Trevon Bromell's last race to kind of understand that you take 2 steps and you can be gapped by 2 meters immediately.
All
but
right.
We will see.
We ran out of time because we had so much fun with the first one. And we're going to ask like 4 more, 5 more. We run out of time because we had so much fun with the first. Hey, I know you're a boxing fan, okay? Less than a minute here, even like 30 seconds. What are you more interested in, Tyson Lewis or Paul Mayweather?
Oh, man, that's actually a huge... Well, one, both Lennox and Tyson are my boys.
Yes.
So I would actually like to see it. Like for me, I think that, you know, I'm big on all the old fellas representing themselves and the fact that we can do this at our age still. However, I think I'm with a whole lot of guys that want to see the Mayweather beat down.
Right.
He finally needs
a knockout.
They want to get in there. They want to see a real boxer against one of the Paul brothers. Yeah. And I think they want one of the Paul brothers to get taught a lesson by Mr. Mayweather.
I think they want it to be like DK Metcalf in a sprint. Listen, we are run out of time. This was fun. Let's do this again another time when we don't have a hard out, okay?
100%.
There is Donovan Bailey. Awesome to have him here. All right, those of you watching on Sportsnet, Hockey Central is coming up next. Tim and Friends continues, as it always does, on Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. For the full 2 hours, we'll talk baseball with Kevin Millar next after this. Ran out of time there. Donovan was on a roll. Welcome back to Tim and Friends on Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blue Jays opening a series with the Houston Astros tonight in Texas. Ross Stripling gets the start for the Jays. Blue Jays Central will get you set 7:30 Eastern on Sportsnet. George Springer, of course, will not face his former team after being placed on the injured list over the weekend with his ongoing quad injury. But he did meet with the media earlier today to express his frustration with the early season injuries.
To say extremely frustrating would be an understatement, you know, especially being new to the organization, being new to the team. You know, I was excited to come and play and, you know, attempt to help any way that I could. And then obviously I'm no good on the bench, and it's extremely frustrating for me to not be able to play. You know, that's all I want to do is play, and to not be able to say is extremely frustrating. Is an understatement.
After salvaging a split with the A's over the weekend, the Jays are 16-14, so that's third in the American League East. Take a look at the standings. They're two games back of first place Boston. Last place Orioles are just a game under 500. Listen, I know it's early, but it's just 3.5 out of first. Now, things are even tighter in the National League East, where all five teams are separated by just 2.5 games. And we're seeing this around the majors right now trending. Four games separates first from last in the NL Central. 4.5 games in the AL West. 24 of the 30 teams in the major leagues are within 3 games of their division lead. And only 3 teams are more than 5 games out. In comparison, 2019, 12 teams were more than 5 games behind on May 1st. Is it just early? Is there more to it? We will figure that out coming out in a mere moments from now. All right, joining us now on the line to discuss that and more is a former world champion and the host of Intentional Talk on the MLB Network, Kevin Millar. Kevin, what's up, buddy?
Boys, what's going on, man?
You know, we're just is this tightness early? Is it just early, or is there more to this? Like, I was thinking, and listen, the Dodgers have some injuries, so they were probably going to be the best team in baseball and maybe even run away with it. But are you surprised at how bunched up everything seems, even this early?
Yeah, the parity is awesome. I mean, you would have thought, right, like you're saying, Dodgers are way better than everybody going into the year. But then there's always this thing, and I don't know what it is. It's hard to repeat because to win a championship, obviously you're a good ball club, but you have to have some breaks go your way. There has to be a little luck playing at the best time, you know, those last couple weeks of the season. Now, you all said look at the season the way it's gone as the start. I'm sure the Dodgers had different thoughts. And now the injury of Dustin May, and here we go. The Giants are the story so far early on. These are what make baseball stories great. And, you know, we get locked in as media to talk about, you know, the high, you know, salary type teams. So we heard a lot about the San Diego Padres and obviously the Dodgers and the West, but you sit back and you look at teams. Blue Jays are a team, and they're young. Are they ready to compete with the Yankees? Well, the Yankees, you know, they've kind of gone through their struggles also. Red Sox get swept by you know, the Orioles to open the year up, what happened to them? Now they're the best team with, I mean, the best record in the division. So it's what makes baseball great. You got to play the game.
Jays are in Houston, as I mentioned. What did you make of how the Astros were treated in the Bronx?
Yeah, I think last year was a very, forgiving year for the Astros, obviously, with the COVID situation. So I think they benefited the most in a shortened season. But then you look at the fans haven't forgotten. You know, I'm sure players are still rumbling here and there. It was the first time we saw that with player versus player type situations when this all came out. But I think it's understood if you're in the Astros clubhouse. Are you going to get tired of it? Of course. But it's the way it kind of all went down that, you know, this is the way it's going to be.
There was a story that suggested that the Astros were upset with it and that a dude wasted $80. I don't know if you heard this one, but the dude wasted $80 on an Oscar the Grouch costume on Amazon when a security guard told him, no, sir. Are you buying the Astros, this isn't fair, the way people are treating us right now?
No, I honestly, God, listen, in that clubhouse, you got some good dudes, you got some good veterans. I'm sure that, you know, there's some guys that weren't involved that get linked into being involved. And this is the kind of thing that happens that might have only been a few players, but you're on that team and you're supposed to know. I think they're probably like going to be treated unfair for certain dudes that maybe had nothing to do with it, but you were on the team and now you're linked in, and that's the way it goes. I think they also understand. They're not stupid. They understand they're going to get some heat and the trash can banging. I mean, those are just skits that the fans have the right to do.
Do you see it going away anytime soon?
Yeah, time heals. Yeah. I mean, how many times, you know, stories happen and something else happens, right? So time heals. It's just, I thought last year was a big deal because I thought it would have been a really rough year for them, even a year removed, and then going into this year, it's not nearly as bad as you would have thought.
Right. With the other players, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Kevin Millar joining us here. World champ, host of Intentional Talk on the MLB Network. Maybe it's because my last, and I'm sticking with Houston here, but maybe it's because my lasting memory of Minute Maid Park will always be Albert Pujols absolutely annihilating a baseball over that train track in left field off of Brad Lidge.
Yeah.
But is there something weird about this DFA story, Albert Pujols, the Angels, and the timing of it? Like, I can't get out of my mind what Albert Pujols used to be, and I know that he's not that anymore. But is there something weird to you about the DFA story?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Angels are in last place in the West. This is where it's always the fine line, because when you're talking about a Hall of Fame, first ballot, what he's done in this game is remarkable, all of it, okay? When you get towards the end of your career, you're not the same guy, okay? It's just the way life is. Your bat speed's slower, you're moving a little slower, and you knew that, and the Angels knew that, signing him to this 10-year deal, you know, when he was 31 years old, so you knew the back ends kind of get hairy. Well, here we are. We're at that position, right? And so, you know, there's players going to voice disrespect. How do you do this to Albert Pujols? What's the underlying story? Listen, Joe Maddon's sitting there trying to manage a ball club, and you're trying to put the best guys out there you can to win a game every night. He felt, and this organization felt, and somebody felt, it's time to, you know, it's not an easy situation. It'd be like Derek Jeter growing old with the Yankees, right? How do you handle this? Derek Jeter's got all these rings. But if Didi Gregorius throws harder, is faster and stronger at this point in his career, that's how it happens. So this is a very touchy situation because really it's for Albert to look in the mirror and either say, put me up against left-handed pitchers that I can have some success with, or maybe it's time to go and move on. I don't know a lot of the ins and outs, but I know that, listen, you're hitting under 200 and the game's tough. I mean, guys throw hard, and so they see us at bats every day and they felt it's the right thing to do.
Do you think we see, like, a signing in St. Louis for a little while and just the going out there? Like, it just seems weird to have this be the end of Albert Pujols' career.
Yeah, and who knows if it is. It might be the end there, but it might not be the end for some DH spots at some other team. And you never know, like you said, is this a weak contract for the Cardinals? And it does feel like it needs to be done that way. He should have his farewell year like everybody else, or at least a goodbye to praise what he's done. And that's the way it gets done, you know, with class. I just don't know if this was a mutual thing, you know, handshakes. I mean, still owed a lot of money. If not like he's not getting his money, but no, he is a money. Great player for many years.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's not that bad when you think about it. When you put it that way, he's still getting that cash, which is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I give Knuckles a hug. I love you, man. I just grew old. That's okay.
All right. Speaking of smashing big flies, I don't know if you know this, but today is the 5-year anniversary of maybe the greatest highlight in the history of baseball. Big Sexy, Bartolo Colon hitting his first and only big fly. Has there ever been a moment that made you smile as much as watching Big Sexy smash his first and only home run?
Well, James Shields is who he hit it off of in San Diego, and it was unbelievable. Big Bart, who is a good athlete, by the way. I mean, the one thing about him, he was a great athlete. He was like LeVon Hernandez. He was a heavier set guy and played with us in Florida. But tremendous athlete, moved well.
Yeah.
And Big Bart got a hold poor Shieldsy's fastball and took him deep. But I don't think Shieldsy thought it was funny for a while because it was so gratifying for all of us fans, Big Bart included, and every pitcher around the big leagues that just can't hit. He went deep, and it was an awesome thing.
You know, the Shields part of this, I took in early and then I kind of forgot about, but you can see how classy Colon was. Like, he wants to laugh. And out of respect, he kind of, like, looks down and just goes into his jog because he knows what it feels like to give it up to someone like him.
That's exactly right. It's like this mutual respect, right? It'd be like, you throw me a fastball, I'll throw you a fastball. You throw me curveballs, I'm throwing you a curveball. This was one of those things, if I get you, let's not make me feel terrible because I already feel pretty terrible. I'm going to get worn out by my teammates.
Right.
And Shields is an awesome dude, but you know how that just kind of burns you inside. I remember John Lester was like 0 for 52, and him and John Lackey have been buddies for many years, and Lack's pitching for the Cubs. The Cardinals, and Lester's hitting against the Cubs, got his first hit off his buddy Lack, off his cab. And I remember Lack was not happy. Afterwards, you're going to have some beers, but it was funny, the story, hearing them banter back and forth.
All right, before we let you go, the Jays got some prospects, and I'm not sure how much you know about Alek Manoah, but college pitcher, first-round pick, looks crazy sitting down Yankees in spring training. He gets his first AAA start in Buffalo / Trenton. He goes 6 innings, looks really good, 2-hit ball, 12 Ks, but my guy hasn't played above A ball until this start. I know Jays fans are starting to feel like they're at their grade 8 dance in the excitement that they have for this, and I get it, they need starters, but is there a too early in your mind?
You know what? It's weird. Velocity, 6'6 frame, 200 and whatever pounds, deals over 250, but there's a presence. Pitchers can go through a fast track because if you're able to get out at the A ball and double A level, now, mentally, is he ready? That's obviously for them to know, but I always had a theory. If you're dominating and you got high velocity and you could get out, so I think you can get out to the big league level too with executing the same game plans. If it's too much, then they go back down and they want to get some innings. But this day and age, to answer your question, no. It doesn't seem like anything's too early. This game's young now. Yeah. They fly up. Your Tatises are all over the place, position player-wise, and Acuna Jr.'s. Now, you know, we have Alec coming up here and see what happens.
You know, but it feels like it's like this in every sport. Like, I look around, and hockey's like this, where these kids are coming up immediately making an impact. And basketball players, I mean, I know they're coming out really young in basketball, but it just seems, and maybe you can correct me here, it seems like everyone's more pro-ready because of all of the stuff that we now give kids at young ages.
Yeah, I think it's everybody is specialized in their sport.
Yeah.
You got to have lessons. You got to have privates. You got to be in select baseball. Right. You got to be. So the parents have already invested $150,000 since they were 7 years old in traveling the country for their dream. Well, guess what? At 19, like you said, they're taking the puck and going down and scoring or hitting a home run or throwing 100 or slam dunking a basketball. I mean, it's a young man's – everybody's bigger and stronger, and it's the way it is. I mean, you look at the videos of Babe Ruth. We weren't around to see him, but there's a difference of looking at Mike Trout and Babe Ruth. Now, who was better? Well, you tell me.
Right. Always like catching up with you. Thanks for doing this, my man.
You're the best, man. Appreciate you.
Be well. There is Kevin Millar, world champ. And co-host of the Intentional Talk on MLB Network. All right, time for one last break. We'll take it. Get you to your weekend, kids. It's Friday. Best of the week winner and wrap it up with Last Call right here on Tim and Friends with Jesse Rubinoff. Next. Welcome back. Time now to crown our best of the week winner. You voted, we counted, and in a landslide, the dad press conference takes home the title.
You sum up the day.
Yeah, honestly, just felt like we got behind early. After the milk spill and the marker on the wall, we just felt like we were playing catch up the rest of the day.
Right before you went to the store, you called a timeout. Was there an attitude change after that?
Yeah, it felt like we were losing our heads there for a minute, so we wanted to just calm things down. And get back to the basics.
Did you ever find your keys?
No. No idea where they are.
You gave them a snack half hour before dinner. Was that planned?
No. I lost track of time. Wasn't thinking. And so, you know, 3 bites at dinner. That's on me.
It didn't look like you had many answers to the double team.
Is it a question?
So amazing. By the way, I got this thing for my keys. It's called a tile.
Oh, it helps you find it?
Yeah, it helps you find it. And, like, I refused it. My wife got it for me because I needed it because I'm a dad and I've done the exact same thing a million times. And I said, no, I'm never going to lose my keys again. I'm not losing my keys again. And I've been decent.
Really?
I've been decent of late. I don't know if I've completely...
So you haven't had to use it once?
I don't... No, I didn't put it on.
Oh, you're... Okay, fine.
Yeah, I refused it. I was like, I'm not that old. But I kind of am. Jesse Rubinoff, that's the voice. Let's do Last Call.
Yeah, not many things worse than losing your keys. Oh. So for your sake, I hope you don't.
I lose things all the time.
It's brutal. You addressed this a little bit earlier in the show, but we got to talk about the polls again, okay?
Do we?
Sorry, we have to.
Do we?
Yeah.
Floyd Mayweather. Sure, though?
Yeah, we haven't even shown the video yet, but we got to do it. Floyd Mayweather and Logan Paul held a press conference at Hard Rock Stadium yesterday to promote their June 6th exhibition match, if you want to call it that. But it was Mayweather getting into an altercation with Logan's brother, Jake. The two are basically the YouTube kings of the world and social media influencers. After Mayweather said he could beat up both siblings in the same night, Jake told him he'd take him up on the offer, and that's when things popped off. Let's have a listen. Before you give me your hot take on this, what did Jake Paul do? Well, he got a tattoo on his leg that says Gotcha Hat. Then he changed his Twitter profile name to Gotcha Hat. And he's also selling Gotcha Hat hats. The question is simple. Who do you dislike more, Floyd Mayweather or the Paul brothers?
That's a wonderful question. I like the way you framed that. I didn't want to do this, but I like the way you framed that. The answer is neither, but I do want to see Floyd Mayweather actually knock somebody out. Like, I would like to see Floyd Mayweather, who has made his career dancing and winning, but dancing while winning. I would like to see him finally knock. I was going to do what I shouldn't have done, but knock up. Beep, 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 out. Okay? And here's the deal. Like, I want to give them their credit for hustling people out of their money.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure. Yep.
They are the cult of celebrity in 2021 to the max, and good on you. But this is a sports show. Like, I love sports. And what they're doing is making a mockery out of the sport. And I just wish someone would have the guts to stand up to them. Now, Floyd might need the money, and he might need to fight both of them, and he might make it interesting like he did with Conor McGregor, but someone needs to get in the ring, someone who has dedicated their life to sports, and just beat the living snot out of them.
We'll see who steps up to the plate, because there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people in that camp.
I don't know if I should hate them or respect them for their hustle.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly don't, but as a sports dude, part of me really, really laments the fact that people actually think that they're fighters.
I said this to you earlier. They're taking what 2021 has offered them on a silver platter, and they're running with it.
Yeah.
We got Donovan Bailey's 25th anniversary of his double golds in Atlanta coming up this summer. And today we're celebrating a couple of other anniversaries in the world of sports. You addressed this also with Kevin Millar. The 5th anniversary of Bartolo Colon's only ever home run. It's also the 32-year anniversary of Michael Jordan's the shot, which is considered one of the greatest clutch shots in NBA history. It's also the only thing Craig Elo is famous for. So which play is more impressive?
Poor Craig. Craig Elo was good. Craig Elo like averaged like 20 points a game in the National Basketball Association.
Sorry to Craig.
And Craig Elo is only known to a generation for appearing on Last Dance. Michael Jordan is more impressive to me, although I love seeing Bartolo round the bases in that, just that truck manner. Big Sexy is impressive too, so I'm going to say it's a tie.
Yeah, it's understandable. A lot of meat behind that swing. Like, he had to connect at some point, right?
At one point, he was an athlete. Yeah. At that point, he wasn't.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
No.
Ohio State Senator Andrew Brenner is making headlines after he was apparently driving while participating in a Zoom call.
He made the
Zoom background his actual home office to make it appear that he was at home. Now, the irony of the situation, the topic of the call was a debate on tougher penalties on distracted driving.
No way. That's so, not what they were talking about.
It is definitely what they were talking about.
For those listening on radio, you can see a seatbelt and his hand moving in the manner you would while driving. Oh, my God.
How do you feel about the senator trying to pull a fast one in the fast lane?
This has got to be among the worst of all time. Like, I mean, there's the guy who went to the bathroom while he was at the meeting and left the microphone on. That's not his fault. This guy tried to pull one on everybody with a seatbelt over his shoulder. That's unreal.
What's the statute of limitations on distracted driving? Because someone's going to say something about that.
No, like, you got to get a ticket.
You have to. But he's not caught in the act, technically. Like, it didn't happen at the time. He didn't get a ticket right away.
You could say he was in his driveway. Right. Oh, my God.
Gross. Right.
That's amazing. That's a really good one. All right, kids, coming up on the network tonight, Blue Jays Central ahead of the Jays and the Astros, 7:30 Eastern, 7 p.m. Eastern, Caps, Flyers on Sportsnet 1. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you chose to be here with us, and we appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend if you can. We will talk to you again on Monday, but before we go, it's Friday. Then it's Saturday, Sunday. It's Friday, then it's Saturday, Sunday.
It's Friday, then it's Saturday, Sunday. What?
It's Friday, then it's Saturday, Sunday. What? It's Friday again. It's Friday.
$5,000 fine. $5,000. Let me put that in perspective. That's the same fine the NFL gives out for wearing your socks too low. I'm not kidding. Anthony Stewart is wearing a sweater. I believe it's his own jersey. Is that what we're doing here?
Yeah, and this is to combat JD's awful take last night on his good show when he mentioned that it's very faux pas to be wearing a jersey as a grown man. So I'm trying to let everybody know that jerseys are still in style, regardless of what JD has to say about that.
First of all, wearing your own jersey, if you played in the NHL or you played at a high level, I think pretty sure. Actually, that's kind of its own level of douchey, I would say. It's like, look at me. Are you Anthony Stewart? Like, why, yes, I am. Like, well, that's
Anthony's
you.
On our photo wall, and you're not on our photo wall. Jackie, cut or uncut jerseys on grown-ass individuals.
Uncut. What is your problem with fun, JD?
I just think it's a little strange. And for me personally, if I'm thinking about being someone who's above 30 years old, going to a store and buying a sweater with someone else's name on the back who's 22, it just has a weird vibe.
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable wearing jerseys of people who I'm not related to that are younger than
I am.
Third of the four games.
So sick of learning about new body parts courtesy of the Blue Jays. Every night, unless there's an injury, I honestly say to Ivanka, okay, where's the oblique? And she'll tell me. And honestly,
I mean, where's the oblique?
I'm dead serious. I know the quads on the back of the leg. My dad's a doctor, probably not a very good one.
Not on the back of the leg. I told you this the last time you were here.
I'll be honest.
On the front of the leg. You're not listening. Stop listening.
That's my problem.
Front leg.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
What's the back?
That's the hamstring.
I thought the hamstring was the inside.
See, now, my injuries in high school taught me these things. Yeah. And you know what else my injuries in high school proved? I did something.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.